Today's Swappa number is 35. That's the number of member questions we weren't able to answer during the Swappa virtual call in March. Most of those questions related to the operation and probably best suited for our schedule research committee. So today on the show, we've asked SRC committee member Dan O'Connor and senior analyst Megan Nealon to answer all the scheduling questions we didn't get to.
Our members have questions ranging from Contract 2020 asks to how our current operation is doing. We'll ask Dan and Megan about those things, as well as some of the great tools SRC produces for our pilots to help them optimize their work schedules.
Southwest 1014, runway 28, clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff, 28, Southwest 1014.
I'm Kurt Heidemann.
And I'm Amy Robinson, and here's our interview with Dan and Megan.
So Dan and Megan, like we said at the beginning of the podcast, we're trying to work through some of the questions that we didn't get to during the virtual call a couple weeks ago. So the first question that comes up is, what are the possibilities of adding the option to bid on open time at double time TFP? Pilots would basically have three options then. So the person's asking, what if we had an option for straight and then premium and then double time?
If you remember during the SEP process, we did look at surge pricing, like their suggestion, kind of like Uber, but actually polling didn't really show us a strong demand for that. What we did do is replace the current VPF process with VDT, which is voluntary double time flying. So it captures that double time pay. As you know, right now, these pairings that fall to VPF have already been offered a premium. So there's really not a lot of incentive for pilots to bid on those again. So we've introduced VDT as a step right before JA. In other words, we're looking for volunteers to fly that flying rather than it being assigned. The hang up the companies had with this is that they believe that more pilots will hold off on their straight and premium bids, holding out for the double time pay. But you have to remember that we have a lot of other proposals in Contract 2020 that work together so we don't get to that point, including a fully rigged open time, a shorter ELIT Umbra. So you have to look at all the proposals in totality. We don't believe there will be as much flying that falls to this point in the process.
One of the things we got on the virtual call repeatedly was, what are the chance of positive space for commuters?
Well, the short answer is right now the company really doesn't have any interest or hasn't shown any interest in the short term. But in Contract 2020, we do have several asks along those lines, one of which is when commuters need to use a commuter policy, providing must-ride travel to catch up with the pairing, because it's pretty inconsistent right now how they do that. And two is when pairings end with a deadhead, to offer commuter must-rides to the station of their choice. We feel that that will capture some benefits for our commuters.
Megan, I think this question will be for you. Does the SkySolver software look at reserves when they hit enter, or does it just look at pilots who are currently flying, like the guys that are deadheading or sitting?
Yeah, so SkySolver, it's a pretty complex program. It does look at reserves. There's an element to it called the Global Reserve Callout, I believe is what it was called. I don't know if it's changed since my time in crew scheduling. But essentially, it'll look at available reserves and try to bring that component into a solution, which is where you see some of the inefficiencies. Is it brings pilots in to try to solve them on the line, and then when it doesn't, it sees what can it spit out into an open time pairing that you then have a reserve available for. Problem is, it might not always make sense that that's the flying that you uncover. Just because you have a reserve, that's when you end up with, you know, deadheads between bases and deadhead only duty periods to position a pilot. And that's a component that we've been trying to engage with the company on how to solve in a smarter way and not put so much emphasis on those reserves.
Another question we got is about the attrition rate for the 1 to 5 year FOs. I know we did talk about that a little bit in the town hall as well, but can you address it, Dan or Megan?
Yeah, we're at 6 so far for 2022 of pilots who've been hired in the last 5 years, and a majority of those have been the recent new hires.
And those numbers Megan's talking about are pilots that started at Southwest, got an employee number, and then left. But it's important to remember that doesn't capture the higher rates of new hires that are being moved up from future classes. For example, we had new hires over last week to SWAPA, and I think there's approximately 36 pilots in that class, and roughly 18 had been moved up from future classes.
Which meant that they had filled those holes and then moved up people to fill the holes.
We can only assume there's been attrition before they even show up to training, and they had to move people up to fill those slots so they didn't go unused. So it just shows that there's a pretty robust market out there for pilots.
But we don't have a data feed to be tracking that. So it's really, we have to just talk to these new hires when we bring them in.
Next question from our membership during the call was, is the company going to attempt another double time MOU this summer? And if so, what asks are we considering?
Well, we probably can't say for sure whether we're going to have another MOU. That's probably more of a question for the negotiating committee. But we will tell you right now, the company has over 4,000 flights in their schedule for this summer, June, July, and August, with about 1,000 fewer pilots than the last time they had that many flights.
Pre-pandemic,
thank you. And they do proclaim they're going to reduce those to a more manageable schedule, but it's not really always as simple as that, because how the flights get optimized into duty periods, pairings, and lines is a more accurate measure of the manning required to fly that schedule.
Well, and a missing data point, too, is we don't have aircraft utilization, but we're given aircraft numbers. So they say they're going to reduce the schedule to, you know, 620 aircraft, say, for June. But when we don't know how they're going to utilize that aircraft, you know, in terms of block and flights and routes, there's not a whole lot that we can do to determine how well manned we are for that.
And we always talk about the number of aircraft, but it's not really a good measurement anymore, or pilots per aircraft, right? What's really the metric that our pilots should look at, or what's the company looking at?
Well, we're really starting to look more at the block hours flown per pilot. And as the company decides to up their reserve manning, what happens is the lines become more dense. In fact, we're running with fewer hard lines this summer than we ran with last summer. And we thought that was pretty dense last summer. So basically, they're optimizing more and more flying into fewer duty periods. So they end up with pairings that are pretty dense that don't flex well with the operation. And then they leave little margin for recovery.
So I think what the company looks for is, how can they optimize the schedule in such a way to maximize contingency manning? In other words, to maximize how many reserves that they have available.
So what about after the summer?
So, yeah, we do track, updates that come out from the company. September and October just came out, and so we're just first now getting a look at it. It's more realistic to what we'll be manned for right now, the way the strategy it's been to sell as much as you can and then cut back. And we still have over 4,000 flights in the summer schedule. They haven't cut it back yet, whereas September and October, it's lower than that. So that should make for a better quality product to then build the pilot schedule, as well as for passengers where they're not being reaccommodated.
If there was one thing from the 2020 proposal that you could put in going into the summer, what would it be?
Well, like we talked about earlier, this whole rewrite for Contract 2020, especially the scheduling proposals, are really meant to work together, not only to improve the quality of life, but kind of to drive systemic change for the management of the schedule, more efficiency, more productivity. So we can't say there's any one thing that would fix the airline. You really can't look at this piecemeal. In fact, if you do look at just one part, you easily say that would fail. But again, you have to look at the totality of the asks.
Well, there needs to be an investment in all work groups. There's not one thing that we can do from, you know, the pilot contract, you know, be it an MOU or implementing 2020 proposals. You have to see all the other work groups also get better tools in order to support the operation as a whole.
So that ties directly into the next question, which is the company's growth plan for this year realistic based on the flight instructor staffing?
I guess that remains to be seen. It really depends on their success in hiring instructors and keeping them. They've already had to modify their training plans this year once already, so we'll have to see if they'll have to do it again.
Well, we meet with the company once a month where we get updates on that, and I don't think there's been more than maybe 1 month since Southwest started to grow again where they've been able to fill a training class for instructors. People, they say, drop out, you know, within that 7 days before starting. And now you're doing the same thing you're doing with pilots, where you're backfilling, and then you're not even backfilling to fill the class. So eventually something's going to give.
And they've also indicated they've started the process of hiring more than they actually need. In other words, planning for a certain attrition rate. So hopefully that'll help with the final numbers in each instructor class.
So one of our next questions was, our duty days are getting long and overnights are short due to delays. Is there any thought of getting time and a half when we are extended beyond our scheduled duty day?
Well, Contract 2020 does propose what we call leg change override, which is an override applied to any leg that's different than your original assignment or award. Usually the override is 50%, but in some cases it's 100%, depends on where it happens in the footprint of the pairing.
And then the idea is to capture every single leg that changes. So there's no longer, if it fits within the current footprint of a duty period, there's no reassignment pay. A big part of that is to change behavior to where SkySolver has to be programmed differently on how it's going to treat reassignments. Otherwise, it gets too expensive. So this is very much meant to be a penalty to protect or reduce the high levels of reassignments that are being experienced right now.
And remember, these are overrides that are going on top of trip pay. So in other words, this will help with the problem of rig absorbing reassignments, as well as the problem of doing more work for no or very little additional pay. As far as the overnights, longer overnights have been proposed in Contract 2020 in both the planned and executed phases. So better protect the operation and reduce fatigue.
Next question for you guys is, since we have junior guys stuck on reserve for much longer, why aren't we focusing on reserve rules and manning more?
Well, actually, Contract 2020 definitely doesn't ignore the reserve. There's quite a few proposals in there, especially since the company is getting addicted to more and more reserves. We're introducing reserve ELIT, also some more options for own and release to check-in, which can be a huge quality of life improvement, especially for someone on reserve that commutes. And also
to explain what we mean by release to check-in, the whole concept there is once you're initially assigned as a reserve, you can choose to not just own it, but to be relinquished of your wrap. So you don't have to necessarily commute, you know, the day prior for that early morning wrap. You're just focusing on the report for the pairing, and you're not having to worry about it getting swapped out by scheduling over and over again, which we're seeing a lot of that right now, again, with those high reassignment rates. So you get some of that long call component protected within your current reserve system.
And we've also introduced a reserve open time process, which is kind of a form of self-assigned, but with a little bit of a seniority aspect to it. So the reserves will have a little bit more say of what they're assigned.
And then that automates the process too. So there's a little bit less ambiguity on why one person got assigned over another, if it's not always clear, since that's a manual step in crew scheduling. So that allows you to grow as an airline because now you have more automated processes and you're not having to rely on that manual effort.
Megan, I just want to ask one thing here. You said about the release to check-in, that it was becoming more and more common, or it was very common nowadays. I remember when we did the SEP process, we said it was a very uncommon process. So what exactly do you mean?
Well, we also have to keep in mind very different paradigms. Yes, reassignments were a problem back in 2018 when we were doing that data. But at that time, we thought 15 to 20% reassignment was high. Just this past weekend, we had 60% reassignment rates. So 60% of you out on the line were experiencing a reassignment. So it's just higher for everybody right now. So I guess I shouldn't caveat that as just reserves, but we're trying to invest in aligning our reserves more with hardline rules.
Our next question was, it seems the company is addicted to reserves. Why doesn't having more reserves equate to a better running operation?
Well, I mean, this actually kind of goes into what we were just talking about. Back when we were running 2018 data, you had your reserves at about 14% of the hard lines as far as manning goes. Now we're up to 20 to 25% reserve. So we have that many more people that are sitting reserve. And it keeps going back to this this mentality that your reserves are your best way of protecting your operation right now. And there's a distinct disagreement on how that's being analyzed.
So what Megan just said sounds a little unintuitive, I think, to a lot of people. If you have more reserves, that it makes the operation less flexible. Can you explain why that is, or what do you mean by that?
Well, I think we mentioned it earlier that we're running fewer hard lines than we were last summer, even though we've added manning between all of our XTO pilots coming back and new hires finally joining the system. You would think we'd be adding more hard lines, to provide more pairings and to cover you know, the growth in flying. But instead, they're putting that investment of all that manning into reserves. And so what that does is it locks up your hard lines. You can't trade anymore. You can't bid on open time because you just don't have enough room in your schedule to add work days because work days are up as well. And then people are tired of getting reassigned. So when they do find something that they might be legal to bid on open time, they're not necessarily putting their name in the hat.
And like polling has showed us in the past, almost 75% of pilots show some reluctance to bidding open time because they're afraid of reassignments.
And that was that polling was done before we even hit the highs that we're hitting right now in terms of just schedule irregularities. I mean, last year, our pilots lost 14,000 days off to JA. It's unheard of.
And another point to consider with the reserves is it's kind of a death spiral there because a lot of times the company's mindset is we have all those reserves, we need to use them. They're quote unquote prepaid. Well, what they do is they create pairings specifically just to be assigned to the reserves just so they use them. So what that does is it makes inefficient pairings, it increases deadhead inflation quite a bit.
And discourages open time participation. There's just so little trust right now that the operation is stable and not many people want to insert themselves into that chaos.
Another question we got was, what do we feel is the number one thing that will reduce the pilot sick call rate?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of reasons why pilots call in sick using the I'm Safe checklist. So it's probably hard to pinpoint one thing for the entire group. But we can definitively say through data, there is a direct correlation between reassignments, fatigue calls, and sick calls. So providing a stable operation would be a great place to start.
All right, next question. What pilot manning level is the company shooting for, and when do they think they'll meet it?
Well, we've never been given specifics beyond 2022, which we have about another 1,000 pilots to hire through the rest of this year. But we've heard in, you know, the company town halls, the number 775 being the aircraft target. But again, without any additional information about how they're going to use those aircraft, it's hard for us to determine ourselves even where the manning needs to be.
Another question we got is, when and which city will most likely be the new pilot base, and any chance of a Hawaii base?
Well, we haven't heard anything about a new domicile. And obviously, with such an emphasis on recovering the operation, especially with the East Coast not fully recovered, their emphasis on growing Hawaii and Denver, we're thinking that's more likely going to be their network focus, first optimizing a new domicile at this point.
Well, and then opening a domicile is expensive. And so they put a lot of consideration into, is there a financial benefit at that point? You know, will your pairings optimize better if you insert another domicile into that mix? And so they do these things called a free base solution with their crew planning, the programming. And the last we heard, there isn't really any particular station that would benefit the current domicile structure. Ugh.
So those are all the questions that our pilots asked during the virtual call that we didn't have time for. But now let's talk about some other things you guys are working on. So let's start with negotiations. How are those going?
Well, we've been serving as the scheduling SMEs. We recently were in on the training, vacancy, and vacation sections that were presented to us last week, and then we'll be engaged next week as well, or I guess this week when this comes out, and that'll be the primary scheduling section. So, you know, planning, additional flying, training, and reserve.
And they've said they're planning on going through current book sections 5 through 8. So in only 3 days, we really don't expect a very comprehensive counter and probably did not incorporate many of our 2020 asks.
On a positive note, we did finally start seeing some data in, I think it was some of the training and vacancy. So it's good to see that some data is now going into how they're shaping, you know, their counters. But it's very one-dimensional where they needed to go extra layers into it to actually derive something meaningful to then shape your proposal around.
With all of the data and analysis you guys have access to, technology is a very big focus for SRC. So talk about the role of IT with SWAPA and also with SWA.
Well, as you know, our new CEO's background is technology. He's made a couple of comments, such as modernizing the employee experience and giving our exceptional employees the tools they need to serve each other, reinvigorating our winning culture and modernize the operation. And we do believe this is the key for all the employee groups to have the tools that they need, which is a concern. You can't just fix one thing. We could have the most efficient contract with the best technology, but if they don't fix the rest of Southwest, things can still break. You know, we'd like to get to a point where the technology at Southwest and the tools that the work groups have are industry leading and give us a competitive advantage, and are not a liability. And we do believe Contract 2020 moves us more towards that.
Well, and then I'll add, even just from this last week in negotiations, some of our 2020 proposals were reviewed, and if it was a technology touch, it pretty much didn't make it into their counter. So, you know, you hear that saying, watch what they do, not what they say. So it's easy to say that you're going to invest in technology, but then things are already being stricken because of the technology touch. It just doesn't match.
So guys, enough about negotiations. Let's talk a little bit outside negotiations. Has there been any collaboration you'd like to speak about between SWAPA and Flight Ops outside of Section 6?
Well, yeah, we do meet with crew planning once a month, and so we get updates on network outlooks. We've also started scheduling separate meetings with their analytics team because we're trying to further along the data share effort, aligning data sets, understanding what they're looking at and why. Things like absenteeism, reassignments. We've been trying to do an open time sourcing of determining what flying is actually being covered by open time and where did it come from. The issue there is there needs to be more of that whole dialogue between the company and the pilots and the pilot union, because a lot of times the root cause isn't what's actually being measured of why you have that open time. So you need that, again, that added layer of that dialogue on determining root causes and trying to decide how you want to tackle those root causes.
Okay, so you guys publish probably the most amount of information that comes out of SWAPA in terms of, you know, tools and articles and et cetera. One thing I think you guys, you try to say on a regular basis, but talk to the pilots about where can they find all of these things that you guys put out.
Well, obviously, there's quite a bit of information on the SWAPA.org website. You can either go to the Schedule Research Committee page, where we have a link to past articles. We have tools. We have the scheduling handbook, which we've actually just revamped. We just actually put it out last week. A new version has new information on vacation, LRF, the new audit tool. In fact, we make all the new hires download this on their new hire night when they come to SWAPA. And you can also just from the main page go to resources and drop down and hit all of our tools.
Dan, you just mentioned the audit tool. That's a pretty big deal. Can you give us a plug about that? What's the deal with that?
So it's still in its beta form because it can't assess every single scenario. I mean, the pay process here is so complicated, but this tool is meant to not only serve as a determining whether or not you're being paid accurately, but also to teach you daily reassignment payrolls and the whys behind you're getting premium on this day and not on that day, or why those legs pay double time. So we highly encourage the entire pilot group, even if our disclosures say it's not going to pay you or it's not going to process your pay properly or it's not going to necessarily give you the right estimated pay, there's still learning that you can gain from utilizing this tool. And then send us your feedback, because we're going to continue iterating and making that better. And eventually we'll launch it in such a way that it covers everything.
Obviously, there's a few other avenues also, podcasts. You know, thank you for listening to this. The Tuesday Snapshot every week, SRC does put information in that. Often it's timely, such as vacancy information. We also started approximately a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, Contract 2020 QA Blueprint Series, which talks a little bit more specifically about what we're asking for in Contract 2020. And we've also started targeted emails, specifically OTP, Open Time Priority. We send emails to pilots that are approaching the upgrade window, and we also have a new hire series that we send every 4 months with certain videos that are applicable to where they're at that point.
I also want to give a little bit of a push to the Blueprint series. That's actually a really good, quick look at what the scheduling proposals are for Contract 2020. And I think it's very succinct. It's very easily digestible. And it's one of those things that I think, you know, people who ask to see the entire flight plan, you know, it's available. But if you have very specific, you know, questions about, well, what's this or what's this, it's really well done and it's very easily read.
And you raise a good point on that. They're also easy to find, thanks to Calm, because all of them are archived on the website. So if you do miss one, or if you want to go back and review them, they are on the SWAPA website. And I will point out that we started using the Blueprint idea months ago before the company. So I'm glad they're paying attention to what we're doing, taking our ideas.
And we run those initially in the snapshot every week. And then, as Dan said, if you miss one, it's all going to be in one easy-to-access resource.
Our thanks to Dan and Megan for talking with us today. We really appreciate our members asking us questions during the virtual call, and we wanted to make sure we had them answered.
And as always, remember, we do want to hear from you. If you have any questions or concerns or things we didn't answer, please drop us a line at com@swapa.org.
And finally, today's bonus number is 24%. That's the number of assignments during the first weekend in April that were reassigned three or more times. That's three or more calls to crew scheduling for notification of the reassignment, legality checks, and possibly hotel and transportation changes. We can't keep going on like this. With input from our membership, our SRC has proposed a comprehensive framework at Contract 2020 to help our airline fix our constant operational problems. Now it's up to labor relations to start negotiating in earnest.
Southwest 1732, Denver Tower, runway 35 right, clear to land, wind 270 at 5.
Clear to land 35 right, Southwest 1732.